very disturbing that the fire alarm doesn't go off when there's a fire like that.
Fire at a local apartment complex sends students out into the cold.
The file sharing crackdown heats up.
And a little campus program gets a giant boost. TERP Weekly Edition starts now.
This is TERP Weekly Edition, a look at the issues and news in and around the University of Maryland College Park. TERP Weekly Edition is produced by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio.
Hello and welcome to TERP Weekly Edition. I'm Shira Yudkoff.
And I'm Eric Schaefer. Details on those stories coming up. But first, TERP Weekly Edition has learned that discussions are ongoing within resident life about potential changes to campus housing. University officials declined to confirm reports of possible changes, but they did tell TERP Weekly Edition that an announcement is expected early this week. Just last spring, rising seniors were told they would no longer have housing on campus. That news led to a 10-city protest on the mall in front of McKeldin and a rush by juniors to find off-campus housing. We'll bring you all the details on the coming changes in next week's show.
A late-night fire ravaged a Hartwick Towers apartment last Thursday evening and forced the evacuation of the building. Hundreds of students were left stranded in the cold and stunned at the black smoke coming out of the second and third floors of the six-story building. Alex Wiener lives in the third floor where the fire broke out.
Somebody was banging on my door saying, "There's a fire, get out." So I opened the door and the hallway is completely smoky. I couldn't even find the exit. You could see the fire like three or four doors over from my apartment.
Some residents couldn't get back into their apartments until sunrise the next morning. Many Hartwick residents couldn't understand why the fire alarms failed to go off in their building. Emily lives on the fifth floor.
I think it's totally unacceptable in a breach of a contract to have no fire safety in the building, and that I want to know what actions are being taken. Whatever happened tonight doesn't personally affect me, but I'm sure those people will be following up in their own way.
Prince George's County Fire Department spokesman Mark Brady says it didn't take long to determine the cause of the fire.
Fire investigators have since determined that a overheated electrical extension cord ignited nearby combustibles, starting the fire, which was in the bedroom of this third floor apartment.
Brady was asked if the fire could have been prevented.
It's hard to say. I mean, accidents do happen. This was an accidental fire because of an extension cord that perhaps was overloaded. So people do need to make note in these circumstances that extension cords, if they are overloaded, do tend to overheat. And if they're either under a carpet or have papers on top of them, it does get hot enough where it can ignite a fire.
But the big question, why didn't the smoke alarms go off?
Now, from what we understand, there were smoke alarms in the building that did activate, and that was if you had enough smoke in your apartment for it to work. Otherwise, we had occupants that attempted to activate the pull stations in the hallways. We had a University of Maryland police officer that was the first public safety official on the scene. When he got here, he did not hear the bell, so he attempted to activate the bells. They wouldn't work. And when our firefighters arrived, they did not hear the bells either, so they attempted on the way up to the third floor, tried several different pull stations, and the bells did not work.
Brady says the fire department ordered the operators of the building to correct the problem, and that was done. Brady says it's now up to the residents of the apartment complex and the owner to find out why the alarm system didn't work. And, says Brady, it was fortunate the fire happened at a time when many of the student residents were out. Had it happened later in the night, he says, it could have been a very different story.
Freeloaders copying music off file-sharing sites are being tracked down by federal agents and the music industry, led by the Recording Industry Association of America. File-sharing mom from Minnesota, Jamie Thomas, was convicted by a jury and now owes $222,000 for illegally downloading music off the Kazaa file-sharing network. College campuses are now being scrutinized, and the University of Maryland is finally taking action to protect students from getting caught. TERP Weekly Edition's Ronaldo Cavello reports.
Students for years now have been trying to beat the cost of buying music by taking advantage of free downloading programs. DC++ is the latest, and now it and the University of Maryland students who use it are being targeted in the latest crackdown, a recent article in the Diamondback about a new DC++ hub set up by a student on campus, reportedly brought the RIAA to the Campus Office of Information Technology. The association reportedly asked OIT to close down the hub. This university junior says all the fuss and stress that go with file sharing aren't worth it, and that the industry should direct its efforts elsewhere.
I think that's kind of wrong, because I think they should have kept anonymity about the whole deal. People on the hub TerpHub have been writing down the names of the people who've been reporting them in the paper, so I figure, you know, fair is fair. But I think it's going to become a mess, because last year we had the same thing go on where some guy went in the paper and basically exposed the hub, and then he basically got a crap storm.
This freshman says he was looking forward to taking advantage of file sharing when he came to campus.
I heard about DC++, and I was like really pumped up about it, because like lots of people use it, and you know, RAs even use it, so like I figured it's not that big a deal.
Vice President and CIO of the Office of Information Technology, Jeffrey Huffkamp, recently wrote a letter to the university community. In it, he makes it clear the use of peer-to-peer file sharing on Airs and LimeWire will no longer be permitted. But this freshman says such programs can be useful.
I know it's been going on for quite a while and it's been shut down a while, but I don't think it's gone for good and think that somehow it's going to start up again.
Amy Ginther, coordinator of Project Nethics on campus, tells Terp Weekly Edition she can't comment on OIT's new rules. We tried repeatedly to contact OIT, but were unable to get our calls returned. As for the OIT closing the hub down,
I think that it's definitely something that the students love to have, and like if they could keep it up, like that would be awesome.
There are reports that OIT has met with some students to explain why the DC++ hub must be shut down. But when asked why the hub must be closed, a spokeswoman for OIT would not say. In College Park, I'm Ronaldo Calvello for Terp Weekly Edition.
The university may soon crack down on another kind of file sharing. Graduate Student Government President Laura Moore has asked the University Senate to authorize software that helps catch plagiarism. The program is called SafeAssign, and Moore says it will cut down on grad assistants' grading time and strengthen academic integrity on campus.
For every particular assignment, I'm sure that most students are not cheating. It's just really hard to know because we haven't been able to track it very well.
SafeAssign is already available free on Blackboard, but can't be used unless the Office of Information Technology enables it. Moore's proposal must be approved by the University Senate. No indication as to when the Senate will consider Moore's proposal.
October 11th was National Coming Out Day. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender equity, or LGBT, and the Provost's Office at the University of Maryland used it as an opportunity to discuss how minorities, specifically Latin Americans, Latinos, and Asian Pacific Islanders, fit into the LGBT community. Shiva Subbaraman, Associate Director of the Office of LGBT Equity, explains why this year's recognition of National Coming Out Day is different from previous years.
Usually we have not done a special event. We have usually had, you know, published the Allies and Outlist in the Down and Back, and this year we made a conscious effort to do events. So this is a presentation which we are very excited about because it really is going to talk about LGBT people and people of color and data gathered on that.
President of Pride Alliance, CJ Rock, is excited about how the university chose to celebrate National Coming Out Day.
I think that it's really important that we have this speaker coming today and talking about LGBT issues for communities of color, because so often people just associate having an LGBT identity with being white, which isn't the case. There are LGBT people in all communities, so I think that's really important to give visibility to populations that are traditionally underrepresented.
13 years ago, President Brick Kerwin and the university tried to extend benefits for domestic partners of faculty and staff. Despite countless efforts, the initiative failed. Now President Dan Mode is taking up the cause, and he's getting resounding student support.
Equality!
When do we want it? Now!
It was the message heard, loud and clear, from students to allow benefits for domestic partners for campus faculty. Back in 94, the idea was to have benefits for all state schools. Louis Chaporis of Pride Alliance says today's approach is different.
President Mote's proposal asks that us here at College Park be allowed to do this. Because they've said no in the past, we just want the permission to go ahead and offer it on our university so our university doesn't decline.
In a statement from President Dan Mote, not providing these benefits hurts the school's reputation.
Including not providing fair compensation to employees and working against recruitment and retention of talented people.
State Senator Jim Rosapap, who represents College Park, says he's advocated this for years.
I served for 5 years on the Board of Regents of this university. I supported domestic partnership benefits. We couldn't get the votes to do it at that time. But I am confident that this will be the year that we will get domestic partnership benefits.
Last week, the Student Government Association voted to support Mote's proposal, but not everyone was on board. Finance legislature Ryan Daniels voted against it, not just on a moral stance, but an economic one.
There has to be funding taken away from, you know, another person or another, you know, another department or, you know, the money can be used elsewhere.
But Japora says it will not take away from any program.
This university has over $1 billion annual budget. The total cost for domestic partnership benefits here is estimated between $700,000 and $800,000. That is a drop in the bucket.
There's no timetable for when Moat's proposal will come to a vote in the Board of Regents. Governor Martin O'Malley says he supports civil unions for gay couples. Brittany Borgi also contributed to this report.
The University Senate for Persian Studies is getting a little help, to the tune of $3 million. The Roshan Cultural Heritage Center, an independent charity, is giving the four-year-old center on campus money to help it expand. Terp Weekly Edition's Ashley Sharif has the story.
The Center for Persian Studies is unique because it's the first of its kind. Although other colleges offer classes on Persian language, the University of Maryland is the first campus in the country to offer an interdisciplinary program on Persian language, culture, and literature. Dr. Ahmad Kermi Hakak, the program's director, says that there's still room to improve.
At the moment, we offer 12 courses every year, which is substantial in itself, more than offered by some other small programs. But in the future, we are hoping to raise this.
Kermi Hakak says it's important to learn about the Persian civilization and traditions.
Persian culture is one of the ancient cultures of the world, and I think it's well worth people's time to study it critically, but also substantively.
Students who take Kermi Hakak's Persian literature class agree they gain much from the classes.
I thought it would be a good idea to take a class with a literature that I was not familiar with.
I focus a lot with like Arabic and Middle Eastern studies, but I haven't really expanded much to Persian studies, and it's a culture that's related but totally unique.
I thought it was kind of embarrassing because I'm Persian. I don't know much about Persian culture, so I decided to educate myself a little.
The money being donated to the center will pay for a senior linguistics position, graduate fellowships, and undergraduate scholarships. The additional funding will also allow the center to host more events like the International Conference on Rumi, which was held last month on campus.
We think conferences are a particularly helpful series of events in that they bring together the experts and put them in conversation with the educated non-specialists, and as such, greater understanding of the culture emerges.
Kermi Hakak says about half the students currently enrolled in Persian studies classes are heritage students, those of Persian descent. The other half have little or no connection with Persian culture or literature. Kermi Hakak says that the current political climate with Iran has not deterred students from wanting to learn about Persian culture.
This is a passing thing. We think politics is a passing phenomenon. We think what's lasting is culture. We think young people do not entertain as much prejudice as their parents might, and as such, if there are negative things on the political plane, they would appeal to the culture to understand the reasons for it rather than just form negative opinions.
Although the center does not offer a major or minor in Persian studies yet, they hope to by next year. For Chirp Weekly Edition, this is Ashley Sharif, College Park.
Coming up, Resident Life says dorms and drugs don't mix.
And Marilyn goes mad for the 37th time. This is Chirp Weekly Edition.
This is Chirp Weekly Edition. I'm Eric Schaefer. Students for a Sensible Drug Policy, or SSDP, is kicking off a grassroots campaign to lower the penalty for drug use on campus. Their target? Resident assistants. SSDP has been hand-delivering letters to RA since last month, urging them to use discretion when dealing with suspected drug use in their hall. Resident Life responded, telling the RAs they don't have the authority to decide whether to call the police or not. Resident Life says it has a strict policy that requires RAs to call police any time they suspect drug use. And if you think ecstasy was a fad that died out in the 90s, think again. Studies conducted by the Maryland Center for Substance Abuse Research showed a resurgence in ecstasy in 2002. In this three-part series, Terp Weekly Edition's Carly Rebell investigates ecstasy use on campus. And hears from one man who broke the drug's hold on him.
Everything felt so sensual and euphoric. I just felt like I loved everyone.
This student is describing the effects of the illegal substance MDMA, more commonly known as ecstasy. So why is something that creates such positive feelings illegal? Drug enforcement agent Paul Maloney.
Because it has no medical use or no safe use, and it has a high potential for abuse.
Penalties for possessing and distributing ecstasy are no joke. Maloney explains.
It could be between 5 years to life, depending on the amount you're caught with.
Yet students don't seem to have trouble finding the drug. One student says he took ecstasy for the first time at a popular dance club in D.C.
When we got there, it was pretty easy for us to find it. We took it and we just had a whole lot of fun for the next 6 hours.
Taking ecstasy may put you in more than legal danger. Agent Maloney.
It can cause brain damage through extended use. It lowers levels of the dopamine in your brain.
Some users think they can avoid the risk of brain damage.
I always take vitamins to eliminate any of the potential damage, along with taking some 5-HTP, which allows you to restore your serotonin, which is pretty much the only damage that is done at all.
While the effectiveness of these practices could not be confirmed, many experts admit that they are unsure of how much long-term damage the drug actually causes. Spokesperson for Maryland's Center for Substance Abuse Research, Erin Artigiani.
Humans are very adaptable, and other parts of the brain can pick up functions that are lost.
While the long-term effects of ecstasy may be unclear, other uncertainties about the tablets could kill you. In the next segment, we will investigate the dangers of the illicitly produced pills and their potentially deadly contents. For Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Carly Rubel.
Stress and college students usually go hand in hand, but you may not know that depression does too. In fact, the American Psychiatric Association says nearly half of all college students report feeling so depressed at some point that they have trouble functioning. Last week, the campus observed National Depression Screening Day. The Health Center set up a table in Stamp Student Union where students filled out screening surveys and talked to counselors. Suicide Prevention Coordinator Carrie Martin.
Signs and symptoms are so subtle and that they don't even realize that they are suffering from it. And that's why the screening event is so important, is to know what the warning signs are, what the symptoms are, so that a student knows how to get treatment for it.
Students came to the table looking for free food, but found much more. Senior Amy Gogan.
I didn't expect to actually be talking to anybody afterward. That was cool. I thought I was turning in the survey. Yeah. So it was nice that it was interactive.
To take a depression screening survey anytime, visit health.umd.edu.
For years, campus food has been the king of online food delivery around here. But there's a new contender for the throne, Feed the Turtle. The new web-based delivery service created by university students not only offers online delivery, but provides menus of local restaurants and drink specials of nearby bars. Jimmy Lyons runs the site.
Campus food is an online ordering website. We're an online menu guide. We provide specials that other people can't get for us, that you cannot find on any other website or any ad in College Park.
Lyons, a business and finance major, says he hopes to continue running the website after he graduates.
A little hoops action for the Maryland men's basketball team, but this time they watched from the bench. Some of the team's players served as judges for Lambda Chi Alpha's fourth annual Hoops for Kids. Terp Weekly Edition's Ross Masco has more on last week's philanthropy event that let students show off their basketball skills.
Over 350 Greek Terps filled Ritchie Coliseum to watch members of their respective houses compete for the chance to win basketballs signed by the men's basketball team. The proceeds from the event went to the Ronald McDonald House Charities of D.C. and Northern Virginia. Junior Brian LaPola is the coordinator of the event.
We have a hot shot contest, which is when a fraternity pairs up with a sorority and they go back and forth. It's like to give as many points as possible. Then we also have a slam dunk contest, which is mainly for the fraternities. We don't get much sorority involved with them, but that's always a lot of fun.
Claudia Lewis represents Ronald McDonald House Charities. This was her first time at the event, and she was impressed even before it began.
They've already told us this. The early revenue return is greater than it was last year, and I hope that when we hit next year with the 5th anniversary, it will be even more.
At a time when the university is trying to crack down on the partying of Greek life, Lewis says it doesn't take much to see the good that Greek life has to offer.
You hear so many negatives for young people, and all they have to do is come and see the enthusiasm and the dedication and the giving back that this whole, the Greek community and all the students are doing, and you say, they're special.
Terp players James Gist, Gravis Vasquez, Bombali Osby, and Landon Milbourne were the judges for the dunk contest. Lapola says it's not hard to get the athletes to participate.
Because this is our fourth annual event, we actually have a really good reputation with the coaches and the players, and they're always really wanting to get involved.
Lapola says he's pleased with the $20,000 Lambda Chi Alpha raised this year, but he thinks that with increased advertising, next year they can increase both participation and dollars raised. In College Park, I'm Ross Masco, Terp Weekly Edition.
After watching students take center stage, the basketball team was on display as their season officially kicked off with Maryland Madness Friday night. Terp Weekly Edition's Ross Masco captured the sound from this tradition started by Terps Coast Lefty Drizel back in 1970.
Well, basketball season is here. It is great. And as always, we thank all of you for coming out tonight for Maryland Madness. And now, please welcome the University of Maryland, Gymkhana Vultures.
Gymkhana team does the best job of rallying everybody, because as soon as they're out, everyone's on their feet and like, okay, I just saw a guy jump through the hoop full of fire. This is awesome. I am ready to see some basketball players. Can't say enough about our women's team right now. I mean, the stuff that Brenda Fields has done with them is just astronomical.
Bristol Langmore.
And we've got the makings of a dynasty. There's definitely an optimism, and you know, Gary's kind of back in his groove, and I can't help but be confident about this team.
Now in his 19th season, our head coach, Gary Williams.
Every year it seems to get bigger and bigger. The way they put it up on the video screen, and he comes in a Lamborghini, it just, I mean, the crowd just goes crazy.
With the first practice completed, both the men's and women's teams look forward to their opening games. The women host Team USA on Halloween, while the men face Concordia University November 7th at Comcast Center.
Coming up, Americans are going green, or are we? And Broadway sends the Performing Arts Center a little potty humor. This is Terp Weekly Edition. Stay with us. In Green Festival in Washington, D.C., hip-hop artists, botanists, architects, and many more showed off and celebrated their environmentally friendly products. I went to the Green Fest for more on this two-day party with a purpose. There was lots of talk and plenty of information about what you can do to improve the environment, but it was the endless assortment of environmentally friendly products that caught the eye of University of Maryland student Matt Johnson. Johnson says he worries that one of the main messages of the Green Festival about limiting consumerism was being lost.
I sort of go with a political mindset, like if there's certain speakers I want to get to come speak on campus or efforts I want to engage in, whether it's something to do with alternative energy or clean water, something I'm interested in, I want to get involved. How I can. Wasn't really so interested in sampling different teas and like coffees. I thought that was kind of silly. I think the idea is we need to consume less, not consume better products.
But Hannah Lee, another participant at the festival, saw things a little differently.
Obviously it's mainstream now too, so I just see it getting bigger and better, and it'll just, you know, I think the conventional world will have to conform. eventually to make this place sustainable for our future generation. So it's a positive thing.
Also taking part in the festival was Hunter Lovins, named Hero of the Planet by Time Magazine 7 years ago. Lovins says that businesses don't have to choose between turning a profit and protecting our ecosystem.
If all you care about is maximizing your profit, you would do exactly what you would do if you were scared to death about climate change. Because we can protect the climate at a profit, and companies are starting to do it.
Lovins listed numerous businesses that are reconfiguring how they operate in order to better preserve our world.
DuPont recently announced it was going to cut its emissions of greenhouse gases 65% below its 1990 levels by 2010. Now this is somewhat more than our president says our national economy could not possibly afford to do. And over the same time frame, DuPont reckons to get 10% of its energy, a quarter of its feedstocks from renewables, as DuPont joined Greenpeace.
If businesses continue making efforts, Lovins says,
we could save in this country $300 billion a year that we are now paying to buy and burn energy that we don't need to deliver the services we do want.
Over 24,000 people attended DC's Green Festival, which featured multiple lectures, panel discussions, and how-to workshops.
Last week, we heard from Turb Weekly Edition's Yohang Ng. She's an exchange student from Hong Kong, and she told us when it comes to being green, Americans have a long way to go. Here's part two of her special report.
Instead of throwing things directly to the trash, a lot of students know they should recycle. But just how much do they understand the concept? A freshman international business major who wishes to stay anonymous said she wastes because she thinks everything can be recycled.
It's not that big of a deal because we can't create or destroy water. They're just going to clean it again and it's going to come back.
Chen Che, a junior finance major from China, does not think so.
Even people think that you waste water and after they process the water, it comes back again, but they still need to pay a lot of money to process the water.
But is the situation really that pessimistic? Joe Moulinot, Associate Director of Dining Services, says, no, not really.
We used to have the napkins in the serving area. A couple of years ago, we moved all the napkins to the dining room tables, and we've actually cut the usage of napkins in half. Now they're right on the tables, so you can take only what you really need.
Moulinot says 11 tons of food leftovers are collected every month for composition. Aside from the dining hall, students also help to recycle in a program called Recycle Mania, which was from January to April. Maria Lonsbury, project specialist who's in charge of Recycle Mania in the Student Affairs Office, says Maryland has done a good job, both in terms of the environment and in terms of money.
We're motivated to do it not just for environmental reasons, but also for financial reasons. When we haul our trash away, it costs at least $50 a ton.
So, what exactly can students do to alleviate the problem? Moulinot, Associate Director of Dining Services, says students should stop taking styrofoam boxes.
We think food tastes better on a china plate and when you drink out of glass.
On the other hand, Lonsbury says our ultimate goal should be reducing waste, not just recycling.
You're feeling good that you're recycling, but you're generating a whole lot of trash. Individually, they might think that what they're doing, it's not a big deal, but over time, multiple students, it does generate a whole lot of unnecessary waste.
In the 9 weeks of the university's Recycle Mania program, around 56,000 pounds of recyclables were collected every week. Lonsbury says that's a good start, but we can do so much more. In College Park, I'm Yohang Ng for Tech Weekly Edition.
Keep on trucking.
So, how many credit cards do you own? Sure, they're easy enough to use, but they can often come at a cost. Missed payments can send you further in debt, and it's reasons like that which led to a rallying of Don't Be a Sucker on campus last week. It was part of the U.S. Public Interest Research Group's The Truth About Credit campaign. The organization wants to change the way credit card companies market to college students. University policy prohibits off-campus vendors, including credit card companies, from marketing and promoting their products on campus. But the campaign also wants to ban gifts from credit card marketers and to prohibit companies from buying lists to students.
Google and IBM are teaming up with the university's Institute for Advanced Computer Studies to train the next generation of computer programmers. The computing giants will spend $25 million each to build data centers at the University of Maryland and five other universities. Computer science students will tap into the data centers to write programs over the internet rather than at desktop computers. The process is called cloud computing, and the companies say the initiative will help young programmers shape the internet's future.
Video games. Most college kids play them, but what effect does gaming have on student study habits? A recent study by the National Bureau of Economic Research revealed that first-year college students who have video game consoles study an average of 40 minutes less each day than students without video games. The GPAs of these gamers are also lower. Terp Weekly Edition's Ashley Sharif got reactions of some gamers on campus.
No, I killed myself.
In many dorm rooms and apartments around campus, the bleeping of video games is a constant presence. As students gather around their TV and computer screens to play, many don't really stop to think about how time-consuming gaming can be.
About 10 to 15 hours.
On average, about 8 to 10. But when I'm binging, it can go to like 30 or 40.
But does it get difficult managing studying, a social life, and gaming?
It's all about time balancing. Sometimes you gotta just be able to balance your gaming time and your play time and your hanging around with your friends' time.
Normally, I just do my studying first, and then whatever free time I have left over, I use that for gaming.
Anthony McCulley, president of the Student Association for Video Game Awareness, Research, and Development, says many of the group's members join to gain experience in making video games. But for him, it's about something more.
For me personally, I'm big into the awareness aspect, kind of help educate students, parents, teachers with regards to the negative stereotypes of video games and show that it's not all bad.
But gaming does have its dangers. It can be addictive. Harris Interactive, a market research company, did a survey about the gaming habits of young adults. They found about 8.5% of young gamers can be classified as clinically addicted to playing video games. But do students think gaming is addictive?
Yeah, sure.
Do you think you're addicted to video games?
No.
It's extremely addicting.
Like anything is possible, of course. Whether it be gambling, smoking, you know, even playing sports. I mean, too much of anything is a bad thing.
And what's too much?
There's kids that have died in Korea from playing it for like 3 days straight. They have epileptic seizures.
For Terp Weekly Edition, this is Ashley Sharif, College Park.
Hexer, not Hexter.
Who knew that you can break into song and dance about bodily fluids? The aptly titled musical Urine Town is getting the University of Maryland treatment. I talked to the people behind the production to ask one simple question.
What is Urine Town?
What is Urine Town?
What is Urine Town?
Urine Town is the place where you're sent when you don't have the money to pee.
That's the literal answer for one actress in the show. For assistant director Walt Dessler, it means
corruption, and it's about the world running out of resources and what happens when, you know, those two things combine.
Kind of strange for a hit musical comedy. But for John Barkmeyer, who plays the hero Bobby Strong, that's what makes it unique.
It just turns everything you ever expected about it on its head in like 5 minutes at the end of the show. And it's a huge whopper thing for you to think about. It just stops the action for a second and you think, wow, I didn't expect that at all.
Here's one example. Kelly McGuigan has to transform her mannerisms and her voice to a 6-year-old's.
Well, she talks a little higher pitched, and so yeah, she just kind of, she talks up here, and sometimes when she gets excited, she kind of grunts a little bit because she gets really worked up.
And for August Shaner, it wasn't hard for him to act like a cop slash narrator of the show.
My grandmother was the first female cop in her city in Tennessee. She was on the force for a good 26 years. So I felt like that's what I tried to put into him. Like he had power and he walked around with his chest. He's very, yo, I am the man.
But it was hard for him to rap like one.
I think it's the last verse where it's just me. Years past, all lived in a jungle, scooping up a bungle, nature's bowl, life of constant
deprivation, certain aggravation took its toll. Soon learn power of the truncheon, organize a function, king to pawn. So if peace is what you're after, Urine Town's the rafter to hang it on.
McGuigan says the biggest hump people have to get over is the title.
Once you get over the, you know, Urine Town part of it, It's a pretty great show, and don't let the title scare you, because it's just a place, just a metaphysical place.
The show runs at the K Theater until October 19th. Just look for the urinals.
Thank you, and good night!
That's all for this week's Terp Weekly Edition. I'm Eric Schaefer.
And I'm Shira Yudkoff. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to hear more of Terp Weekly Edition, visit our website at www.twe.umd.edu.
This has been Terp Weekly Edition, produced and written by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio. Please join us next week at the same time for a look at the issues in and around the University of Maryland College Park.